Do not eat anything with blood. Do not practice divination or fortune telling. Don't round your hair at the temples or mar the edges of your beard. Don't cut gashes in your flesh when someone dies or tattoo yourselves. I am Adonai.
Hi, I'm April Little.
And I'm Anna Dowahair.
And on this episode of Reclaiming the Garden, we're talking about the book of Leviticus in another Bible Dyke deep dive.
Yes, time to get down and dirty and flirty.
I'm nerdy. Yes. So what we just read was like kind of in the middle of the book. And obviously you're thinking like, what the hell is going on with this?
Yeah.
And we're going to get into it. So I figured we would start off for like what we were taught about the book of Leviticus. What were you, I'm curious about what you were kind of taught about this book and not taught, you know?
I mean, I was not taught a damn thing about Leviticus other than like homosexuality is wrong. It's in Leviticus. That's like,
right.
But then like there was always the counter argument of, yeah, it's like, oh yeah, well, Leviticus also says don't eat shellfish, but here we are enjoying a shrimp cocktail. That's literally all I ever knew about Leviticus. And then I guess we'll go into this later, but I did read the entire book like over the past year. And it's not just, it is those rules, but it's not just those rules. But
yeah,
like we never really learned, like in any church I went to, no one really touches like Leviticus through Deuteronomy. Like most people do not touch it.
Yeah. I feel like I was taught these like arbitrary categories assigned to not just Leviticus, but I guess any of the laws of the Hebrew Bible, the moral law versus the ceremonial law, which again, these are like pretty much arbitrary categories. You can't like, there's nothing in scripture that's clearly denoting which one is which. I mean, there are like, there is a sense of like, I guess, ritual law in some of the passages in Leviticus, but yeah, basically the moral law is like all the passages about sex and, you know, loving your neighbor. They seem to, the evangelicals seem to ignore the part about economics, the year of Jubilee, we'll get into that later. And then there's the ceremonial law, which is like all the stuff about animal sacrifice and what foods you can eat. And
yeah.
But the thing is, okay, I was actually looking, I was looking and being like, you know, how do they denote which one is which? And even if you go with the concept that like the about the first half is like the ritual law, and then the second half is like more of the moral law, you know, you find in the part that's supposed to be, I guess, more of the moral law, you shall not let your animals breed with a different kind, you shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed, nor shall you put on a garment made of two different materials. That's in the part with all the rest, like there's it goes right into a passage about like a guy having sex with a female slave after that. So
yeah.
It's like you can't even denote it that way, like because these other things are still a part of, in the midst of like laws about I guess mostly moral things. So I feel like evangelicals assign these like arbitrary categories to how to interpret it, and they just kind of pretend that, you know, they're being you know, literalists, but actually they are still cherry picking things, you know, when it comes,
exactly.
I mean, this whole like Leviticus just proves that biblical literalism cannot exist, because you would have to like actually follow everything. You would have to be like sacrificing animals. So the argument that people would make is, of course, well, with Christ, we don't need to sacrifice animals anymore. And so I'm like, so you're saying that we have to interpret the Old Testament through the lens of Christ, right? Like, or the Hebrew Bible. I try to use that term more because it's more respectful to our
Jesus for beliefs, sure. But yeah, like, and I also found an easy way to break it down. There's, in Judaism, there are weekly Torah portions, and Leviticus is divided into, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, into 10. So I guess over 10 weeks you would read the book of Leviticus, and it kind of details what each section is, like 2 to 3 chapters long, and then like it kind of has the basics of what you'll find in each section. So like the Leviticus 1 through 5 is laws of the sacrifices, and then 6 through 8 is sacrifices and ordination of priests, and then et cetera, et cetera. So at the very least, we can break it down a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so let's talk about authorship. I mean, I don't know about you, and I was taught that it was like Moses that wrote this book, and also like the whole first five books of the Bible.
Yeah, I was always taught that Moses. Yeah, like Moses wrote the Torah, pretty much.
Yeah, but obviously, like, it was actually a mix of oral and written tradition that was compiled by multiple people, mm-hmm. Which is the case for a lot of the Hebrew Bible. Because, I mean, just when you consider even just, like, what happened to Moses, do you think he had time to, like, just sit down and write, like, all of this?
Oh my gosh, yeah, and especially considering, like, so, like, if he did, so much is written in third person.
Right, right. I mean,
like, I feel like that would just like, be a lot of work.
Yeah, so the context of, like, Leviticus, the way that it's written is that, like, it's God giving all these commandments to Moses. And yeah, so that's, like, very third person. And, like, you know, he doesn't have any, there nowhere is a sense of any kind of, like, reflection from himself, you know?
Yeah. And again, these are all rules that, like, made sense for the time in which they existed. Mm-hmm. But as we know, a lot of them don't necessarily apply to today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there are a few different groups of authors that scholars use different terms for these groups of authors that, you know, they believe compiled the Hebrew Bible. Leviticus comes mostly from the priestly source, which makes sense since there are many rules and regulations for priests in it. Mm-hmm. Scholars also split the book into, yeah, I already said the they split the book into two parts, the priestly codes and the holiness codes.
Yes.
Which holiness codes are more about the behavior of the whole people and not just the actions of the priests in the temple. Oh, and I just wanted to say here, I think that in talking about the Hebrew scriptures, even progressive Christians can, like, accidentally or sometimes intentionally be anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this text is not about legalistic, wrathful God. Like, this is about how to order a society in a way that would set them apart from other people, allow them to have clear-cut rules about when it was okay to enter the temple or not, and would point them towards a more just way of living. And, like, you know, while still speaking to them in their context, you know, to quote Rachel Hutt Evans, God stoops. So, yes, there are laws about slaves and a lot of stuff about animal sacrifice, which Jewish people do not do. In case that anyone has a misconception, Jewish people do not do animal sacrifices anymore because they
right.
don't have the temple to do it in. That was, you know, destroyed in the early first century. So,
yeah, precisely. And again, it's, as I think we've mentioned before on this podcast, is that a lot of the, at least, like, especially with Leviticus and, like, a lot of the rules of the land at the time, a lot of it is descriptive, not prescriptive. Mm-hmm. So, like, yes, these were relevant to ancient Jews thousands of years ago, but we don't see a lot of animal sacrifices happening now, or none for that matter.
Also, a lot of these rules were, like, I mean, you know, when you think about the time that they were living in, a lot of them are related to hygiene, you know? Like, you yeah. needed to clean yourself up after you were in contact with sickness, blood, any bodily fluids, the act of childbirth, dead bodies, you know, all, and all these things are also, like, connected to life and death, and so they're sacred. So there is, like, it's like there is, like, the physical element of keeping clean and also the spiritual element of, like, how being in contact with those things affects you. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah,
actually,
exactly.
Speaking of which, I looked up, I was like, what do the words abomination and unclean mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like,
we're going to be getting into one of those clever passages today.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are aware that Leviticus is one of those books that is used to demonize same-gender relationships. The notion of a man lying with a man as a man lies with woman is considered an abomination. We've never actually gone into any of the clobber passages, I believe.
No, we have not. I mean, I feel like technically Genesis 1 and 2, kind of, especially for transgender people, that's one of the clobber passages.
Oh, yeah.
But this is really the first one about, like, you know, homosexuality. Like, of course, yeah. Depending on what translation you're reading, the Leviticus 18:22 and 20:13 might contain the words homosexuality, and that is obviously a mistranslation.
Yes, it is from after 1946.
Mm-hmm.
Or 1946 onwards, then it'll probably have homosexuality in it.
Yeah, well, in terms of Leviticus, it's not all translations that do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's adding a word that isn't there, because the Hebrew just says do not lie with a man as with a woman, for it is detestable. Wait, let me actually see. What does the NRSV say? I know that actually the NRSV has now become the NRS VU, it's like because it adds the word updated edition onto the end of it. Okay, yeah. So, but I don't, and I've looked it up. I don't think this has changed with the updated edition. So this is from the NRC. You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. And sometimes instead of abomination, it says detestable. And I just wanted to, I basically looked up, in terms of helping to unpack this, I looked up the Q Christian Fellowship website. If you're looking up affirming perspectives on Clobber passages, you also might find the Reformation Project website. Don't click on it. They used to be better as an organization, honestly, and they've like kind of regressed and are like not supportive of polyamorous people, not supportive of people who have sex before or outside of marriage. So it's much better to look at organizations like Q Christian.
The best way I can describe it, it's the pick me version of queer theology.
Truly.
It's like, we're not that, look at us. We're not that different. And yeah, we can totally talk about that another day. But yeah, like when I was leading, because I've led a couple of coming out groups through QCF, and there is a whole section on the Clobber passages. And I think no, I've never led a Clobber passage one. Sorry, I had to think about that for a sec. But one aspect that it goes into with the Clobber passages, and specifically with Leviticus, is it was kind of like the rules were all kind of based off of things that didn't fit into the binaries of Genesis. So, for example, not eating shellfish. It's like God made like fish of the sea and creatures of the land, like a shellfish.
Yeah, and because they had legs.
And it's like, wait, but this is neither a fish, this is neither like an animal of the land or an animal of the sea, it's both. So it must, like, we can't categorize it properly, so it must be unclean. Same with wearing different blending of fabrics, and same with, I think pork was the other one too, where it's like, yes, like don't eat a hooved animal, so like not eating horses, but pigs have hooves, so we can't eat we can't eat them. And then like with the blood as well, it's like blood's supposed to be inside the body, not outside the body. Blood outside the body is bad and unclean, which fair, yes it is, but it was kind
of, so everything was about, you know, making distinctions and separating one thing from another, trying to keep contagion like at bay by creating this kind of sense of order.
Absolutely.
And it was I thought an interesting thing I read, did you read the I guess in preparation for this, did you like recently read the passage about leprous houses?
No, which one is that?
It's like right near the part about like, first it talks about like humans who have weird skin things going on. You know, the word leprosy in the Bible is used for multiple different kinds of skin conditions. Basically, I mean, from what I was reading, it's like kind of any weird looking thing going on with your skin, you're going to get diagnosed with leprosy in the laws of Leviticus.
Yeah.
But then it started talking about being like, if there's a sickness in your house, you have to have the priest go and examine it. And when I Googled it, it was like, looks like it's, in the modern day, it's interpreted to be like mold. You know, I guess weird things are appearing on your walls. And back then they didn't know about mold. So when they saw weird stuff appearing on their walls, they were like, it's a sickness that's spreading in my house. So, yeah.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so there were like rules where the priest had to, there were rules that the priest had to examine like the house. And then it would be like, depending on how much it spread, they would either just take some of the plaster and stones out, like the material in the house, or they would like literally just topple the house down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's bizarre.
Sorry, what were you saying before I kind of...
Oh no, like it makes me think of like the I was just thinking of the leprosy passages in Leviticus, and that's like another one that I feel like a lot of evangelicals will cherry pick, because around the time of COVID, when they were like, hey, wear masks and, you know, don't stand close to people, they were like, well, Jesus touched lepers. And I'm like, you're not Jesus, this seems blasphemous. Right. And it's like, again, like you're gonna cherry pick certain parts of Leviticus, but then you're also going to ignore certain parts because Jesus did this thing. But
and there's also I forget, but there is a verse of the Bible that talks about like quarantine practices for the sick. I mean, actually, yeah, technically the people with these leprous skin conditions usually are confined for like a few days before, and then like the priest looks at them again to see if it's healed or not. So yeah, that's actually literally like in the practices about leprosy, there's also stuff regarding quarantine regulations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the, yeah, and it's, I'm reading here, the translators and interpreters of the Hebrew Bible in various languages have never reached a consensus on these infectious diseases. They're also called, I'm going to butcher this, but Zaraath. So it's TZARAATH. So there's never, again, the most common translation is leprosy, but it could be a wide array of different infectious skin diseases. So we're not entirely sure.
Yeah, but like obviously when thinking about the text and the laws in Leviticus, we need to consider like, well, what was the reason this law was put in place? And you know, in terms of this do not have you know, do not lie with a man as with a woman. For one thing, it's not clear that that actually means two men having sex. But also, even if it does mean two men having sex, it's possible that there were some hygienic concerns around that. And also, oh yeah, a big thing is that actually I underlined this when I was reading. There was a part that was like, you know, you are to be set apart from the people. Oh yeah, you shall not do as they do in the land of Egypt where you lived, and you shall not do as they do in the land of Canaan to which I am bringing you. You shall not follow their statutes, and do not defile yourselves in any of these ways. For by all these practices, the nations I am casting out before you have defiled themselves. So it's also probably that this act that is being referred to in Leviticus 18:22 and Leviticus 20:13 probably relate to some kind of temple prostitution, or particularly also something related with well, it could be related with pederasty. I mean, it does say man and not boy, but
Yeah, but and I think even a lot of like a lot of clergy and a lot of scholars do believe that it is against pederasty, which again, it's I think everyone of sound mind can get on board. That is an awful thing, and it should be properly condemned.
So yeah, as long as we're getting into this, so I was thinking, you know, whenever we talk about whenever we as progressive queer Christians say like, you know, there's like loving consensual relationships between two adults of the same gender or sex are totally like okay, you know, as long as it's loving and consensual and everything. Like obviously any relationship between anyone can become abusive, or anyone can use sex in ways that harm themselves or others. But like, you know, in terms of we're talking about two people who love each other, like it's fine. And then people come in and say like, well, what if someone wanted to marry an animal or something? And it's like, that is
Again, I feel like when
very this is a
someone
different
uses that argument, they've genuinely considered like marrying an animal. It's like, well, why
And the
can't
thing
I
is,
do this? It's
okay,
like, you
let's, you
can't.
know what? Let's talk about why these things are definitely wrong. Because of course, I mean, we, you know, with these things, we have the natural like ick factor, and we think it's gross, and that's why it's bad. You know, we have that like reaction in our heads. But the thing is, homophobic people have been conditioned to have that same reaction in their heads to anything LGBTQ. So let's talk about bestiality. Clearly, even in the modern day, is not hygienic. That sounds kind of crazy to
No.
say, but let's do this.
Oh,
Yeah, but like,
God.
you know, even in the modern day, there's no way that you can have sex with an animal that would be hygienic. So, and also,
No,
there's
and
no
like,
way that the animal could ever consent. So.
exactly. Like, consent is, like, again, it's consent is important. Like, an animal can't properly consent to sexual relations with a human.
And
Like,
you also might not know about the diseases that this animal has, whereas humans can
exactly.
get tested for STIs and can use proper, you know, protection.
Yeah, that's so interesting to me. Like that comes up, and like I think like incest comes up as well sometimes. It's like
Where
incest or
yeah, that's also
bestiality.
a situation where like I don't think that consent can really be possible with incest, and also biologically inbreeding is shown to be like not a good thing for humans.
Yeah, like look
So.
at King Tut. Like he had like a club foot and like an underbite and like no chin, and like that was because he came from like this lineage of just inbreeding. And same with, I'm gonna blank on the name, but there was like this Spanish family. I'm gonna look them up, sorry. Oh, the Habsburgs were a basically a Spanish royal family that just like every single member just died super duper young because they were totally inbred. And the Habsburg jaw is, I feel like I need to post this photo in the Instagram now, but he was Charles II of Spain, and he was so ugly that he frightened his own wife, and he has a massive underbite, and it's because his tongue was too big.
Whoa.
Because inbreeding, and like that was like his whole family. And the thing is, like, we know that. Like, we know that, one, it's wrong. Like, it's wrong, but also, like, it's for health purposes and genetic purposes. It's not, like, you can't do that.
Yeah, a lot of times with any relations between family members, I mean, for one thing, there could be a power imbalance. I mean, there could be, like, sexual abuse of, you know, a father to children. Yeah, so in all those cases, it's, like, obviously there is, like, lots of harm going on. Whereas, again, two ladies, two dudes, two any kind of non-binary folks, like, loving each other, there is no harm involved with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like it's unfortunate because a lot of times, too, like, the same gender couples can go through the same shit as different gender couples. Like, there's no, like, I feel like a lot of times queer couples are put on a, we're not asking to be put on a pedestal, but it's like you're put on a pedestal. And then when, like, something happens, like, conservatives, even the evangelicals will be like, see, like, this happened because you were in a relationship with another lady. And it's like,
I bet you, I wonder about the divorce rate between, like, I guess, LGBTQ couples and then different gender couples.
Yeah, I'm curious to know that.
It's probably very similar, I bet. Like, I mean,
I feel like it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then again, it's also, but again, it's that notion of like, oh, see, like, we have to, it's like, if our relationship fails, then it's like a bigger societal problem than like, if, oh, what was her name? Kim Davis in Kentucky, who like wouldn't marry gay people.
Oh, yeah.
And then she had like 5 divorces, which is fine. We all go through shit. Right. And sometimes we need to get 5 divorces, but it's like,
you shouldn't be hypocritical about that.
Yeah, also, Jesus never talks about gay people, but he does talk about divorce, and he does not like it. Mm-hmm. So, not to say that divorce is bad. Like, I'm just, again, the hypocrisy of that.
Yeah. So, in terms of talking about what rules do we follow still, and what ones are, you know, cultural, I mean, that's a discussion that's been going on since the very beginning of Christianity. And you've actually, I mean, you see that played out in parts of the New Testament regarding like the laws of circumcision and food. Can you eat food that's sacrificed to other gods? Can you, can you eat pork? You know, that like, well, so many of Paul's letters are like talking about like, y'all need to stop fighting about this.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I can't even imagine because Paul was very Jewish and he probably came from a legalistic standing of Judaism.
Well,
and
he literally killed Christians. So
yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. It was like a very legalistic, murderous standing in Judaism. And like, I wish I, obviously he has a divine transformation on the road to Damascus, but like, I'm always curious to know like how one would get out of sort of this very legalistic mindset. Cause I feel like this happens with ex-evangelicals as well. Like you come in, like you have a very legalistic mindset. And then when you are out of it, it's like, oh, wait a second, like all these things I was taught were wrong, like these were bad teachings, this was bad fruit, like what do we do with this now? And I honestly wonder, like, again, divine intervention notwithstanding, how like ancient Jews, like I wonder how they took that, where it's like, oh wait, no, you don't have to, like you don't have to make sacrifices anymore, like you can basically like, don't call unclean what I have created clean. Like, don't, like, I always, like, I'm always very curious to know, like,
let's
what
talk
that transformation
about
was.
That story. It's in the book of Acts. I am forgetting the chapter number right now, but it's the story where Peter keeps having, or well, I guess he has this vision, and the Lord, with all these unclean, according to, you know, the book of Leviticus, all these unclean animals descend on this, like, flag thing, I don't know, parachute,
it's like a sheet.
Sheet. And you know, the Lord says like, take and eat, and then Peter's like, no, I cannot, like, you told me not to do that. And then the Lord keeps telling him again and again, and then the Lord's finally like, do not call unclean what I have made clean. And so then after that he goes and he like eats with a Gentile and helps convert his family. And so, you know, that's a clear sign of, like, God, like, showing this revelation of, like, this no longer needs to be followed.
And it's so interesting. So, yeah, I feel like that verse can be applied to so many different things that we mm-hmm. see now. It's like, oh, like, being trans is wrong. It's like, don't call unclean what God has made mm-hmm. clean. Like, don't.
Yeah, like, we don't need the hyper separation anymore in our modern society. We can live in the tension. We can, like, you know, we can properly prepare shellfish. I think it could have also been a hygienic thing, the not eating the certain, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I had another idea. What was I gonna say? I mean, obviously, like, in terms of how some Jewish people reacted, I think some of them were, like, mad. I mean, you can also see that playing out in the Bible too. Like,
yeah,
you know, some people were teaching, like, you need to still follow the law, like, regardless of what Paul was saying.
Yeah, because I also can't imagine being, like, having lived your life in such a legalistic manner and then being told that, like, oh, you don't have to do any of that anymore. And it's, like, that notion of, like, did I do all of this for nothing? Like,
we're going to get into that later when we talk about, well, actually, I guess we can go into this now. So are some really cool things in Leviticus, like the year of Jubilee. It's a practice where, like, every 50 years, all debts are canceled and slaves are set free. Though, unfortunately, the scholars say that people probably didn't practice it because they were asking similar questions like you were saying. They were like, well, I had to pay all my debts off, just like people say today regarding the cancellation of student debt.
Yeah, it's like, I was in debt, so that means everyone should be. It's like, you just want to watch the world burn,
but
don't you?
Seriously, like, if we're going to practice biblical economics, let's do it. Let's literally, let's see. And you shall hallow the 50th year, and you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. And property is returned to people, and, oh, yeah, another thing, there's a lot of, like, economic stuff in the Book of Leviticus that is ignored, like, making sure that, like, you don't harvest too much of your crops to keep some for the poor to eat.
Yeah. Which I think is, like, again, I wish that was, like, an actual practice that we kept from Leviticus, mm-hmm. is, like, having a portion of our land for people to just feast on if they ever needed mm-hmm. to. Like, I think that's so cool.
Yeah. There's also, if, in terms of the animal sacrifice laws, if someone who could not afford the lambs and rams and goats or whatever, they could also sacrifice a turtle dove and I believe some other kinds of birds. And what's interesting, you know, Leviticus, for writing context to New Testament passages, when Jesus was presented at the temple as a child, Mary and Joseph offered that the poor people's sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke was already getting pretty clear that, like, Mary and Joseph were poor, but then with that, he was like, yeah, they had to offer the poor people sacrifice. So.
Yeah. And again, like, so much of Leviticus is basic, like, Leviticus and Numbers, to be honest, are just sacrificial law, like how you specifically sacrifice, like, each animal that could mm-hmm. potentially
yes,
be sacrificed.
There's it's like excruciating detail, you know, like, it's, you have to put the blood here, here, and here. You have to burn the fat. Like, it's that detailed because people used it to actually
follow absolutely. Through the ritual. It's so fascinating to me. And then you look at people who, granted, most of the Jewish people I know are much more, like, reform, or mm-hmm. I guess reform would be the correct word. Like, most Jewish people I know are like, yeah, this is just, like, it's part of our culture, but we don't actually practice this anymore. Like, we don't mm-hmm. sacrifice animals. We don't do this.
Yeah,
like,
I guess they have a Seder meal instead of.
Yeah,
there's a sacrifice of a lamb. They have they get a lamb that has already been, you know, in the regular slaughterhouse. Yeah.
Yeah, so. And I think, like, most people who I know are Jewish and reform and practicing and whatnot, like, I think the only rule that I've ever, like, observed people following is, like, not eating pork. And again, I think that's truly, like, a
Also, I
cultural
know,
thing.
I guess when I was reading this through, I guess this must be in Deuteronomy, or maybe it does Numbers have any laws in it?
Numbers does. Numbers also has the whole abortion passage, but
Oh.
yeah.
Yeah, so I remember I think in Deuteronomy there's something about like not cooking an animal in its mother's milk, and so because of that, a lot of modern day Jewish people do not eat dairy with beef, like no cheeseburgers. So
Oh, that's so fascinating. I never knew that.
Oh yeah, another cool thing in Leviticus besides the economic stuff, like, things that are about helping the poor, which actually, wait, one more thing about helping the poor that I wanted to point out here.
Yes.
You shall not profit off the blood of your neighbor. And just like think about every day how we in as a capitalist society, we do that without even realizing, the fast
Yeah.
fashion we purchase, the sometimes the food we purchase, like it is profiting off of the blood, sometimes literal blood of our neighbor.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you see people, and again, like we can obviously get into this at some point, but like you see people justifying this exploitation of other people knowingly. Like, again, especially with like, I'm thinking with like the fast fashion thing. Like, we do our best with what we have, right? Like, if you can't afford clothing, fast fashion might be your only option. Like, 100% totally understand. But if you're someone that knows better and can afford better, and especially if you're a person of faith and you truly like are like, I read the Bible and I like that is exploitation. Like, don't, like, again, if you are able to do better and you can afford to not support the fast fashion industry or support, I'm trying to think, like
Big agriculture. I
big
mean,
agriculture and like
yeah.
Nestle and all those sorts of things, then don't do it. Like, convenience be damned. Like this is our calling as Chris, like this is like voting with our dollar and not like, yeah.
No, yeah, definitely. And there's also, of course, a lot of things about protecting, well, yeah, protecting the foreigner. In the land, there's a lot of stuff in the passage about that. I don't like how the NRSV uses the word alien instead of foreigner. And apparently, the updated edition still uses alien for some reason. But yeah, I mean, there's the when a I'm just going to replace the word when I read this. When a foreigner resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the foreigner. The foreigner who resides with you shall be to you as the citizen among you. You shall love the foreigner as yourself, for you were aliens, or sorry, for you were foreigners in the land of Egypt.
Meaning, let's take care of our refugees and borders are man-made and meaningless. Like, let's take care. Also, no one's illegal on stolen land. Like, let's take care of each
And during the
other.
year of the Jubilee, the foreigners also got to enjoy that, and also they got to enjoy the Sabbath days and those kinds of things. So,
Yeah, it's so interesting because, again, I think Leviticus is used as a scapegoat a lot of the time to be like, these are all these strict rules of the Torah. And again, it's used to demonize queer people. But there are some like really like solid life rules or things to follow,
Yeah,
not only for,
there's
yeah.
also some common sense stuff like don't eat blood.
Yes, exactly. But it's like, it's unfortunate that like Leviticus has this either this bad rap or this very legalistic rap, because there are like Leviticus has a lot of good to it, but it's unfortunate that it's been used to demonize so many people, or it's just kind of skipped over entirely,
We're
especially in
considered
evangelical
like
circles.
weird and just
It's like, no, I don't follow that.
I mean, it is obviously like to quote the QCF webpage, it's an interesting look at a legal system that is foreign to us, like it's a completely different worldview, a completely different way of ordering a society. But there is wisdom to be found in it.
Absolutely.
I was trying to look up the difference between abomination and unclean, and I guess I couldn't really like find much, because obviously like there is this kind of, I guess, distinction that's made that some things are abominations and some things are unclean. I guess the unclean seems to be more of the, well, no, because I think eating shellfish is called an abomination.
Yeah.
Yeah, the same word used to describe the lying with a man is with a woman. Abomination is also used to refer to shellfish, so.
It's also fascinating. Like, it's honestly fascinating. And again, like, I wish it could be approached with more nuance and more from the intellectual standpoint than being like, ah, ooh, it's in a religious book. Do we fall? What? Let's avoid it. Like, because again, the Bible isn't necessarily prescriptive, it's descriptive.
Oh, another interesting thing that I was looking at. There's a part about oh yeah, the holiness of priests. So I found a verse that I think when I read it, I was like, oh God, this is used to justify purity culture, isn't it?
Oof.
Leviticus 21 verses, well, I guess verse 13, he shall marry only a woman who is a virgin. That is specifically about the rules for priests, that passage, but I bet you that it has just been used to like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, you read those, like, that's something that's definitely used in purity culture today, like, especially with, as we've, I think we talked about in our purity culture episode, like, the sticky tape metaphor, or like the story from.
Yeah, and it uses phrases like the woman who has been defiled, he shall not marry.
Yeah. And again, it doesn't really make, it doesn't go into whether this quote unquote defilement is, was it consensual? Did this person not have the ability to consent? Like, what was it? And that's why, like, again, it produces this bad fruit of we don't see people differentiate those either. Like, it's they're and also who, like, also who the hell cares? But it's like people don't differ, like, they don't,
I
there's no
mean, there's
differentiation.
also, it just like another thing that makes you unclean that relates to sex is that, like, if a man has sex with a woman when she's on her period, like that in the Bible, apparently, if, any man lies with her and her impurity falls on him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and every bed on which he lies shall be unclean. And then I think, did it actually? Yeah, wait, it had a pun. There's also like a punishment for that. Wait, let me look. Let's see. If a man who lies with a woman having her sickness and uncovers her nakedness, he has laid her bare her flow, and she has laid bare her flow of blood, both of them shall be cut off from their people. Yeah, so it's just like, if you wanna prove text verses about sex, let's prove text verses about sex. Like, I guess there are probably some Christians who believe, because they might believe that, having sex with a woman on your period is like a sin or whatever, because of that text, but a lot probably don't. Oh, there's stuff about like festivals, not really too much detail. I feel like it mostly gives, like, again, the details about what sacrifices to make on the festivals, but because there's more detail about the Passover in the Book of Exodus, but
Yeah. And again, of course, the origin of Passover is in the book of Exodus.
oh, a question that I had when I was reading is like the when it's talking about a woman on her period, it says that she has to go through, in the NRSV, blood purification, and I was like, what the fuck is that?
That sounds like, I mean, I know it's probably not, but it almost sounds like a blood transfusion. For some reason, like, I know it's probably not that, considering the technology was not
And
available, but.
this the, her time of blood purification shall be 66 days if she gives birth to a female. Like, whereas it's shorter for giving birth to men. I'm not sure for the reason for that. I guess I'll say I was looking at a website and saw that the explanation given was that it had to do with like the health of the mother or something.
Yeah.
That website also said, though, that I found out that it was a Messianic Judaism website and not an actual Jewish
Oh
perspective.
no. And one thing we do want to say here is that Messianic Judaism is basically spicy evangelicalism in the sense that we're
It's like
Christians,
cultural
but damn it.
appropriation,
Yeah, it's like
so.
we're Christians, but damn it, we want to celebrate Hanukkah. So, like, Messianic Judaism is not a part of greater
They also don't
Judaism as
even
a
like what
whole.
I
Yeah.
from my perspective, from what I've read from them, they don't even actually do their like scholarly research into like Jewish perspectives. They just kind of slap Hebrew words onto things.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like most, again, Judaism as a whole pretty much denounces Messianic Judaism. So, like, because I remember when I just say that because I remember when I was younger, I thought, like, oh, they're kind of like the same, but they're not. They're very much not. So I just wanted to, like, put that out there for people that maybe didn't know.
Yes. Whenever we talk about, like, Hebrew Bible passages, we want to learn from actual Jewish people in addition
Absolutely.
To Christians who are Hebrew Bible scholars. Yeah, I guess I'm looking at this website and, like, yeah, it looks like the translation of blood purification is not helpful and even misleading. There's not really still that much detail about it, but just goes to show that, you know, we're reading the English, but there are even different ways to, like, consider how to translate what these laws are and what the, you know, consider what the connotations of the laws are. I mean, in the Jewish tradition, there is the Talmud and, like, a bunch of several other texts that, like, go into, like, you know, how the laws in Leviticus were interpreted and how, I mean, I guess additional laws were added onto it based off of the laws of Leviticus.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know one thing that we were researching just before this episode was being recorded was the tattoo verse.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I was, thank you for reminding me about that. So I was looking it up because I was like, well, what, like, word is, because it can't, like, mean tattoo because that's such a modern day thing, you know? And so I was looking, and so looking at the Hebrew, I'm looking at, like, what's called an interlinear Bible online, which has, like, the actual Hebrew characters, the words put into, I guess called, it would be called Roman letters. I guess technically our letters are Roman letters. And then the words in the English as literally. And so let me just, Leviticus 19:28. For fun, I'll just read the literal English. Because that way you can get a feel for, like, how Hebrew works. Nor any marks, and in your flesh you shall make not for the dead, and any cuttings am Yahweh I on you tattoo. Wait, yeah, that's what it just yeah, it seems like the word tattoo is out of place. You're like, what is that? And when you actually see the Hebrew, the word you shall make in the English is the same that's being translated to tattoo. And, like, yeah, I was looking at, like, what the, you can look up the Hebrew term where it's used elsewhere, and it, like, it's literally just, like, you shall make or you shall give. And so I'm just, like, thinking here, I'm like, I did not do enough research to be able to answer this question in the episode, but I'm very curious just about the history of that term and how it ended up being translated that way.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think we talked about when the book was compiled. So this is from Wikipedia, which I know is not credible for a academic essay, but this is a podcast, so
exactly. It's like we're giving you the basic gist, and if you would like to do more research, by all means, yes. We would love to chat.
Majority of scholars have concluded that the Pentateuch received its final form during the Persian period. It obviously had a, you know, growth period before reaching that, because of course they, you know, had all these, like, laws and in there. Probably they probably had, like, scrolls, particularly in the temple, to make sure people were doing things right. Mm-hmm. You know, they had this history, and then they had it kind of compiled. I guess the Persian period, yeah, so they were, I guess, in captivity by the Persians at that time, I'm gonna assume.
Huh, I see.
I mean, so much of the, like, so much of the Hebrew Bible was written actually when the Israelite people were either in exile or in captivity. Like, it has a lot to do with, like, these people's wrestling with who they are and, like, what are we supposed to do when we don't have, like, the land that was supposed to be a huge part of our identity.
Yeah.
So
again, kind of goes into that fact that there will never be a Prince of Egypt 2, because the story gets hella depressing.
Yeah. Oh, I also looked up the actual, so the word abomination in Hebrew is toava, and it's used in different ways. Apparently, according to Genesis 46:34, every shepherd was an abomination to the Egyptians. Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of, oh yeah, what's interesting, this website says, male prostitution and or other male homosexual acts, but it does list male prostitution first, so.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, the notion that this is probably very much calling out, I mean, because it's probably very much calling out like man and boy, mm-hmm. or man and child. Mm-hmm. Because again, it, first of all, morally reprehensible. And mm-hmm. I think all of us, regardless of political belief, mm-hmm. can get on the same page that that is terrible and is very much frowned upon.
Also, another interpretation I found, this is just like from the abstract of an academic article. Mm-hmm. From taking a cue from Genesis 49:4 points the way to a different understanding. As Reuben lay on his father's bed having intercourse with his father's concubine, so the man addressed in Leviticus 18:22 is prohibited to lie on the bed of a woman having sex with her man. So it could prohibit homosexual intercourse involving a married man. So.
Huh. Mm-hmm. And again, like, whatever your level of fidelity is, like, if you're someone that's mm-hmm. gone into a relationship believing that it is 100% monogamous, that's mm-hmm. considered wrong. Like, to,
mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, it comes down to, yeah. like, communication. Like, if you do not communicate to your significant other that you are having sexual relations with someone else, that's not
precisely a good thing. Yeah, and it's that notion of like you're harming another person by doing that.
Oh, there's also I did find this one article that says that some scholars believe that the Book of Leviticus, like all the rules, were just for priests, like even the stuff about eating pork. So that's really? Another really interesting thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. I never even thought about that. Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I wish you wish you could go back and be like, hey, what was all of this about? But again, we have to kind of just work with our modern sensibilities and history and putting things together as best as we can and figuring mm-hmm. out which of these produces good fruit. Like, again, feeding extra crops to the poor and that whole sort of thing. And then what produces the bad fruit? And that's, mm-hmm. I think a lot of the bad fruit is truly from just deliberate misinterpretation. But again, it's having to kind of use those critical thinking skills and figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just, yeah, especially for me, I think just one of the most important things is like, how we relate to our neighbor. You know, this is like, this is how they ordered their society. And so I guess reading Leviticus should make us think about how our society is ordered and how we could better, you know, support our neighbors and also support the land. There's a lot of stuff about like letting the land rest mm-hmm. and also switching out. I think it even has stuff, yeah, about like crop rotation. So I mean, yeah, there's even just like literally just, useful agricultural.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, let's get off of our productivity high horse for 2 seconds mm-hmm. and properly take care of the land that we live on.
I don't know how to end this episode. Well, I mean, I don't know how to, I guess we kind of just gave our conclusions, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess suffice it to say, Leviticus is a complicated book. Mm-hmm. It is definitely a doozy to just read through. Not a whole lot of stories, but you do get a lot of insight onto how the ancient Jews
lived. There's one story, the death of Aaron's sons happens.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Okay,
they did the wrong thing. They burned something in the wrong way to God, and so God killed. I mean, well, the story says that God killed them.
Dang, look, there was a point where the end of Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers all kind of blurred together. So certain things, I don't remember which book it came from. But yeah, I guess there's one story in Leviticus. But again, it's one of those books where if you're willing to dive deep into it, if you're willing to kind of use critical thinking, like a lot of critical thought with it, mm-hmm. and realize that, whoa, this is like a really amazing insight as to how people lived thousands of years ago and thrived thousands of years ago, it's pretty awesome. And my hope is that Leviticus is taught more, especially in, for lack of better phrasing, white Christian settings, because I feel like it is an important book to know and it doesn't deserve to get the reputation that it has.
Which we need to cancel debts. We need to, oh my God. I remember, I forget where I heard it, but I think it was like a tweet I read that, like, you know, there's the pollen count is so high because only a certain gender of trees are being planted because in public because they want to plant trees that do not bear fruit because they do not want poor people, I guess, picking fruit off the fucking trees. Like, I just cannot believe.
Yeah.
And that's part of, it's also like, not only that, that's part of why the fucking pollen count is so high. So it's like, guys, we need to plant more trees that bear fruit, I guess.
Yes. Also, I'm not saying that I advocate for gorilla planting, but seeds are cheap and just throw them into gardens and just see what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially like with all of the environmental stuff we've been hearing about lately too. It's like, okay, like let's take care of the land. Let's taking care of the land, we're taking care of the marginalized. We're taking care of the least of these. Like, let's have an earth that is like not a complete shit can, you know, like that would just be awesome. And I sincerely hope that if you've never read Leviticus before, we would highly encourage it, or at the very least kind of dive deep or do like a message reading of it.
If you really want to skip over like the first, I think it's what, the first seven chapters that are really are just instructions about animal sacrifice.
You're like really fascinated in that history, like by all means, we're not going to tell you what to do. But if you're like reading like the first couple chapters and you're like,
and you're thinking, is this all this is? Yeah, it's not all this is. You know,
you just gotta skip a few chapters ahead.
Yeah, but I guess with that, let's go into the high of the week, I guess.
Awesome. So my high of the week, I don't even know if it's a high of the week necessarily, but it was my birthday on Sunday. I turned.
It is a high. Of course it is.
It is a high of the week. I turned 28. Yes, I'm in my late 20s now, which is weird to say. And yeah, it was really nice. And I went karaokeing and a few friends showed up. So I don't know if any of y'all are listening, but shout out to Jess and Nyx and Luke and Ellen. Thank you for karaokeing and hanging out with me on my birthday. Y'all are real ones. And it was super fun. It also made me really sad that a lot of my great friends are virtual friends. I was like, I want to invite April and I want to invite Artie and I want to invite like Carol.
Well, you know we're going to fucking party at QCF in January. Oh yes, my God.
Exactly.
So I guess hi for me. My sister has been visiting because I'm going to be moving to Seattle on July 20th.
Oh my gosh, it's so close.
I know. Yeah, so my sister's been visiting. She has she's a freelance writer, so she can just stay here for like the few weeks before I leave. So that's really a blessing to get to hang out with her.
That's amazing.
And play her Sims 4, because she has a Sims 4 on her computer, so I've been playing it a lot. And just, you know, hanging out with her, we watched First Kill on Netflix. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
It's a stupid sapphic vampire show that doesn't make any sense. It's between the sapphic romance is a vampire hunter and a vampire. It's
that
ridiculous.
Is beautiful. Oh my God, I need to watch it now. Mm-hmm. Give me more sapphic television.
Yeah, the plot does not make sense and I love it.
Yes.
Unless there is any other anything else to say, we can go into the plug.
I have a plug before the plug. Okay. For those of you that are not aware, so Q Worship Collective is a collective that was founded by Q Worship Collective. Jess, I'm really sorry if you're listening to this right now. That was an awful description. So Q Worship Collective is basically a collective of queer Christian worship artists, but also artists from all over the creating world. And we are having our first weekend, a Q Worship Collective weekend. It's going to be the last weekend of August in Southern California at Los Alamitos Congregational Church of, it's a UCC. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Right now we have solidified that Kevin Garcia is going to be one of the keynote speakers.
Oh, that's so cool.
We're going to be having a whole bunch of different workshops. One of our friends of the podcast, who you've heard a few times, Lauren Dempster, is going to be teaching a dance workshop. So we're really excited for that. So if you're interested, we'll leave a link in the bio on how to register. If you're located in Southern California, do the thing. If you're not, you can also do the thing too.
I think we should include the link for Lauren is doing a fundraiser so that she's able to go to the conference for travel expenses. So
yes, absolutely.
Lauren, well.
Lauren, as well as a lot of other people, like I'm excited about how many people are like actually flying out to do this, which is really cool.
I cannot be there, but I will be there through you in spirit, Anna.
Yes. Awesome. Also, I've been asked to teach a podcast workshop, so tell me all of them. Yeah, so tell me all of the things that I don't do on my end, so that way I can go in informed. But yes, definitely donate to Lauren if you have some spare change lying around, because I know that they are flying across the country to mm-hmm. be here. And if we hear of any other people that are looking for funds or looking for housing, we will pass along their information as well, because this is just it's our first time doing this, and I think this will be a great way to bring just queer Christian artists together and writing and worshiping together. So yeah, we can't wait. That was my plug before the plug. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Reclaiming the Garden. You can follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Reclaiming the Garden, or on Twitter at RT Garden Podcast. Be sure to check out our Patreon for exclusive episodes, and you can always check out our merch store to get t-shirts, mugs, and other fun merchandise. If you are able to, please be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as it does boost us in the algorithm. But we are grateful that you are here and listening, so if that's all you can do, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you soon.